Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Sitting in studio, we're watching, is this First Take, I guess, that's on?
Yes, it is.
Cam Newton, God love him. He's wearing, I don't even know that I can describe what he's wearing. It's a fuchsia-colored corduroy jacket with a felt bow tie with John Lennon-like blue shades and a pink, I think it's pink, pink cowboy hat. Like, how am I supposed to take that dude serious? And then you got Ryan Clark, who is wearing the two-tone jacket that he has now made famous, which I don't know why he thinks that looks good.
It's not two-tone. It's like, it's, well, two, it's colors. Two-tone, but it's split. Yeah,
yeah,
one
split.
On one side of his torso is one color, the other.
Right.
Like he's a father of two brothers that are playing on opposite teams or something. You know where you have the jersey?
Yeah.
You wear one Ravens jersey and one Texans jersey? Right.
Right. Like when A.J. Hawk was going to marry Brady Quinn's sister at the Fiesta Bowl, and she wore half A.J. Hawk's jersey, half of Brady Quinn's jersey.
Or Mrs. Watt. Mrs. Watt wore, I think she did that once. She
yeah,
wore
she
half
did that
Steelers,
once.
Half Texans, yeah.
I get it, but he's on First Take. I don't quite understand.
That's what you do, that's how you, you peacock a little bit, and you become more identifiable. Like Craig Sager with
that's
his suits
true,
and everything.
Man.
You look at it like, oh, what a weirdo, why would you do that? And they're like, oh, it's because I know exactly who Craig Sager is.
He's not just
some guy that interviews people. Calvin Murphy in his suit.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like Calvin Murphy, like a lot of kids these days, young Rockets fans know that Calvin Murphy was a great player and everything, but for the most part, they know him as that lovable guy in the big suit
after
games. They love that guy. Yeah.
I love those suits. I just don't like that style. The split style
right now. Yeah.
Like who was it?
Who was the former player that was trying to pull off the ascot for a while?
Was it
Bart Scott? One of them was trying to pull off an ascot as his big identifier.
His identifier.
Yeah. Camp's, that's a tough one to pull off in Houston.
I don't even know what Cam's trying to pull off, but I get, like you said, yay.
Well, Cam can do stuff that's not even, very few human beings could pull off what Cam Newton does with his hats and everything like that. He's like Prince. He's like the athlete's version of Prince. Like, go ahead and try to dress up like Prince in your own life and see how it works out for you.
So we went to Carolina in 2015. My second year on the sidelines. We go to Carolina. It was the year Carolina went 15-1. We were playing in week two. We got smoked in week one by the Chiefs. Not smoked. We didn't play well. And so Brian Hoyer threw an interception to Marcus Peters on the first play of the game. Like, oh, okay. So now we got to go to Carolina. Now, week two, you don't know how great teams are going to be, but knew that Cam was on the rise for sure. Didn't realize he was going to win MVP that year, but either way. So I'm down on one end of the field before the game, and I'm talking to some people. And I look, and I see three of our defensive backs. And I can remember that, but I just knew they were defensive backs. And they were running in one direction. And as soon as they were running in the direction towards the Carolina tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And right when they got to about the 10-yard line, Cam comes bouncing out of the tunnel. And he's got on his Superman Under Armour, like, tight top. He's got his shoes on, all spatted up, headband, music, headphones, and he runs on the field. And I swear to you, our three defensive backs, as Cam goes past him, all three defensive backs turn and look. And I can see the look in their eyes, and I'm like, oh, we're in trouble. Because if you haven't seen Cam Newton, Cam is a legit 6'6", 250. Like, he is legit tight end size.
He's a tank.
He is a monster. And our DBs just looked at him like, we got to face this dude. And I just remember kind of chuckling to myself like, oh, boy, we're in trouble.
It's, you know, it's funny. It's like kind of Derrick Henry. When you see Derrick Henry as a running back, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And
he plays running back?
Sean talked about when he was at whichever bowl game they were in. Sean was on the field before the game when Derrick Henry was just a freshman. And,
and
he was watching them warm up, and he sees Derrick Henry there with the running backs, and it just doesn't look right.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like it makes any sense at all that this guy's a running back. And it probably must be some experiment. They're not going to keep this guy there. No, he's going to. I'll tell you my personal experience with that. My welcome to the NFL moment was my rookie year watching. We went and played the Cowboys in Dallas. And watching Herschel Walker, who at that point I'm guessing was like 34 years old.
Yeah.
He returned a few kicks in that game. And it was like, what the hell is that? like, what? I'm watching from the sideline.
Yeah.
And I got kind of nervous. Like, you're saying, like, how do I? Wait, why are his legs moving so fast? None of this makes any sense. What is that? And that's why, and not to mention, I'm playing against Larry Allen for the first time and everything. There was a lot of, like, hey, wait a minute. Like, this is a different level of genetics here than these other football players I've been going against. What the hell's going on with these guys?
Yeah, when our defensive backs look back at Cam, and then Cam came running by. I understood because Cam went running by me, and I was like, damn. Like, that's a quarterback? Holy cow. And there have been some physically impressive dudes that you see out on a field. Like, when you see Jeffrey Simmons, you just look at him and go, my God. But he's 308 pounds. Like, you've seen 310-pounders.
Tavondre Sweat, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's Tavondre, who's like 370. Yeah. You know?
How big is Jeffrey Simmons?
Simmons is like 310.
Okay. Yeah.
And Tavondre is like 370 or so he thinks. And I think the funniest thing about Tavondre was I saw a playoff game over at Energy Stadium. I just walked in for a little bit before I was about to leave, and it was – I can't remember who they were playing. It was a 4A game, and Huntsville High School was playing. And this kid, number 44, good-looking athlete, moving around, playing defensive end. And so Ryan Broniger, who covers recruiting for Texags, was there. And since I did some stuff for Texags, I was like, hey, Ryan, and he knows the recruiting scene. Like, who's 44? He goes, oh, that's Tavondre. Like, oh, he's good-looking defensive end. He was 255 at the time.
Yeah.
At Huntsville, and that was his junior year.
Yeah.
So, senior year in Huntsville, 4 or 5 years of Texas, whatever it was, he ended up getting up to 375. So, we went to the Senior Bowl last year. I was at the Senior Bowl, and I was lucky enough to get being with the Texans. I got that on the field. And so, I, of course, go watch offensive O-line, D-line drills. And I was like, I want to just see how big he is. So I get down in the field, and I'm standing literally 3 feet away, and I feel so bad because I'm literally jaw open like, holy bleep, he's enormous. Like, bigger than I even could imagine, 365 pounds. You get an idea of what 365 pounds looks like, and then you get up next to it, and you're like, and then he started running. And I'm like, oh, my God, what if that hit you?
Yeah.
I mean, you die. I'm like, just, oh, my God.
You know, that's incredible. The thing about Tavondre Sweat this year. I was skeptical just because, man, when he was at Texas, there were times where, like, he just petered out. You know, you could tell, like, okay, you can only carry that much weight around. He's played more snaps and stayed in the game a lot longer than I thought he would. I think it might help him a little bit in the NFL that the tempo is slower.
Yes.
You know, like when you're a big dude and you're lining up and you're facing an offense that's running, you know, running 100 plays a game, it's tough. And you don't have that much rest time when they're up tempo all the time that you get a little bit more time to breathe and relax and recover in the NFL.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. You do. You get that time, and he's played pretty well. And I mean, he wasn't doing a ton against us. And then he had the sack at the end. It was like, oh boy.
I turned
the switch for him.
there's times where it's still like, and it runs to the perimeter. He can get out there, but there's also times where you're kind of like, okay, that's, this play is over for him. You know, like
I'm done.
He can do it every now and then, but yeah, there's a little bit of like, okay, yeah, he's not, that's it. I get it.
Yeah, he's, I remember there were two plays, the first two plays of one-on-ones. The very first play, they were doing a run block one-on-one. And he had this poor center snatched up. I mean, this guy's trying to drive his feet.
Yeah.
And he's like got him snatched with his right hand up, literally up in the air. Like he's almost like bicycling his feet because they're not even on the ground. And then the next play, Bo Limmer from Arkansas just drove him into the turf and everybody went nuts. It was like an and one game where somebody dunked on somebody else and everybody's running around all like, ooh. And I mean, he just got just drilled. But
the thing about,
couldn't block him the rest of the week.
The thing that was good about it, to correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember from just going back, because I was intrigued, I first kind of like started to pay attention when I saw those clips.
Yeah.
And I went and watched some of his games. And if I remember correctly, he used his hands really well.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that skilled. About all the Texas defensive linemen that year, because I know that defensive line coach that went to LSU, like they were coached really well. Yeah. They used their hands well and everything. And it might sound like no big deal, but there are a lot of guys, like Ed Oliver was a guy that needed to learn how to use his hands properly when he got to the NFL.
Yep.
And it took Ed maybe like 3 years to really to get it.
Yep.
So if you can get a big guy who already has demonstrated that he's got that technique and everything, it makes it feel like a much safer draft pick. Even though he's got weight issues and all that, it just, you can tell, okay, the guy's 360 and he knows how to use his hands. He's going to have some success.
If you've got an athlete, understands how to use his hands. You know this more than anybody. So this is more for the listeners. But when you hear draft dudes like me and some others talk about all this defensive line can use his hands, those guys are typically pretty successful early on and stay that way as long as they don't get fat, out of shape, all that kind of stuff. The guys you worry about are the guys that are just athletic and they just blow and go up the field, and that's how they end up making their plays because they're just that much more athletic than college linemen. But when they're forced to use their hands, and I've talked to so many guys over the years, Khalil Davis, I talked to a lot about this.
Yeah.
And Khalil, last year, he was like, coach is always on me about using my hands. And he got better at it throughout the year, using his hands. And you could really see it by the time they got to the playoff game about how effective he was just by learning what you do with these two things. Like, what do you do with these? And if you can learn it, you got a pretty good opportunity.
He had a play, it was on one of their primetime games a few weeks ago. It was beautiful because he was rushing the tackle, he anticipated the chip block, and it was almost like he was a martial artist. He like clubbed the tackle's hands and then like turned his hips, and the chip missed him completely. And then he got his hand on the quarterback's hand as he was trying to throw the ball. And it was like the most efficient pass rush, broken up pass I've ever seen in my life. And it was like, that's like now you look at him, he's at the end of his NFL career and he's just become a master at all. He's a kung fu master when it comes to that.
Yeah, kung fu master. Colin's producing today. Colin, what's up?
Yeah. So y'all remember the whole thing about the size of Kenny Pickett's hands?
Yeah.
Now, does that really matter for for O linemen and D linemen, like, is that looked into enough? I mean, Kenny Pickett was kind of an outlier. I mean, everyone made jokes about it. Like, just having the internet was just having its way with it. But does that matter when it comes to the trenches?
I think that so like on a functional side of things, I'll put it the sum total of it. I think football coaches and scouts and other players, just like anybody in random life is, when you meet a person that's got a gigantic paw and they shake your hand, you're like, oh, this is a full-grown man here. There's a certain level of – but I think on the football side of it, and John, you know the personnel side of it way better than I do. I mean, in general, like – and I'm sure there's exceptions to the rule. The guys that have huge hands – also just tend to have really big frames, and it looks like they're naturally at, like, the ideal is a guy who almost like wakes up in the morning naturally without ever having lifted weights. He's 310 pounds, because those guys just it feels like they're sturdier. JJ Watt's that way. When you meet JJ Watt in person, you realize like, oh, this guy, he could JJ could carry 40 more pounds comfortably. His frame is just that big. And I don't know how much he actually, you know, it's not like you're banking on just that one trait, but it tends to go along with a lot of other favorable traits.
Yeah, there, and it escapes me now. There was a lineman that had like small, like really small hands. I was shocked when I found out, like, wait, he's got size 8.5-inch hands. That's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because he was really good with his hands. I mean, really strong. But the guys that I think can be like Aaron Donald had almost 10-inch hands. Like, that's big. Now, DeForest Buckner's the biggest I've ever seen, like 11-inch hands. And he knows how to use them now. But Aaron Donald's hands were so good. He's 10 inches, you know, but he was only 6 foot. 285. I don't think Ed Oliver had big hands, but Ed was so quick, but now he's starting to learn. And that's the other thing, too. I know people have talked about, well, you know, we beat the Bills, or I've said this. Well, they didn't play Ed Oliver that day either, and Ed Oliver has been an absolute nightmare for people on the inside, and that's one of the reasons the Bills' defense has had some moments where they've not given up 50, they're only giving up 40 because Ed has played. But I think some of that gets kind of overblown a little bit with hand size and all that, but you know, Jared Goff had tiny hands, and he fumbles the ball a little bit. So it's part of it. But especially to me, the guys on the inside, whether they're playing offense, defense, line, it's a matter of just how strong they are. Because you can have 11-inch hands, but if they're just weak and flimsy, then who gives
it? It is one of those things that, like, it's kind of like the last chain on, like, when we talk about using your hands as a defensive lineman, it's really more on it's how you use your arms in general.
Yeah.
Now, if you have big hands, you know, like, in theory, you should also have a stronger grip and everything.
Yes.
Which is a huge part
grip
of it.
Grip strength.
Yeah. But I should maybe explain that more sometimes. When we talk about hands, it's like the boxing element, the martial arts element of swiping and clubbing and locking out, all that stuff. It's just how you're attacking with your upper body more so than anything else.
Yeah, like absolutely.
The other is, in terms of big hands and times where I felt like a little child, was when I met J.R. Richard for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
So for the kids, Astros pitcher, great pitcher from back in the 80s. But he was famously, how many baseballs could he hold?
He could hold seven, I think.
Seven baseballs in his hand. Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah, absolutely. He had Matt, I'll tell you who's got the strongest hands, is Adrian Peterson. That dude could, like, if you missed the handshake, he'd crush your fingers. Like,
you know what? Okay.
Crush them.
This is my issue with Adrian. That's exactly. I think he tried to make you miss the handshake.
Probably so.
Because I'd heard about his handshake. The first time I met Adrian Peterson, or not Adrian Peterson. It was Adrian Peterson. Sorry. First time I met him, I went to shake his hand, and I had forgotten all about how he's got a strong handshake and everything. And he did the old, he squeezed my four fingers.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, all right, that's kind of cheating, man. Like, we're at a charity event. I wasn't going to ask him for another go-round of it. Yeah. But, like, that's not genuinely a strong handshake. That's an illegal cut block right there.
Yeah, that's an illegal cut block. He jumped the snap. That's what he did. He jumped the snap as an edge rusher. Okay, we didn't talk about Deontay Johnson in this segment, but we will. I promise. We'll talk about Deontay Johnson next.